it's been extremely wet. And we did at the time, as we talked about this unusual weather, a lot of people saying, oh, do you know what it is? We're getting Scotland's weather, and Scotland's getting weather further north, and France is getting our weather. And it was all because the jet stream was in the wrong place. And we thought, yeah, jet stream's in the wrong place. And then somebody said in the office the other day, why was the jet stream in the wrong place? And we all looked at each other and went, actually, that's a good point. That's a good point. We haven't actually explained why it's in the wrong place. So, Dr. Tamsin Edwards, a climate scientist from Bristol University's School of Geographical Scientists, sciences, or scientists, could be either, I am delighted to say, is going to help us out. Hello, Tamsin.
Hello.
Thanks very much for coming in. The, is it, I mean, first of all, is the jet stream in the wrong place?
Well, it is in the wrong place, but more in terms of its kind of persistence in the wrong place. So the jet stream moves around all the time. It kind of meanders around, and it moves between the winter and the summer to different places. So it's not in a crazily wrong place, but it's how long it stayed there.
Right, so it's kind of stayed a bit, what, too far south? More south than it normally would be?
Normally, we expect in the summer, as the temperatures get warmer, the jet stream moves further north, and it normally lies kind of north of Scotland, and it guides all of the wet weather up in that direction. And this summer it spent a lot of time over the English Channel and even northern France.
Is there any way of telling why? Well, I assume that the reason why is probably a long way away from us.
Well, everything on the planet is interconnected, so all of the different patterns of circulation in the ocean and the atmosphere and all the movement of heat and moisture around, everything's kind of connected together. So all of the different changes that we have in weather lots of different things could be causing the changes in the jet stream, basically.
So a butterfly flapping its wings in China causes a tornado in Manhattan.
So, yeah, that's an expression of why weather is very complicated. There's a lot of different things. As I say, the jet stream is always moving around. That's part of what we call natural variability. And it could be just a coincidence. I mean, sometimes if you flip a coin, you get heads 10 times in a row. So it could just be a bit of bad luck.
Yeah.
It could be natural cycles. You know, there are lots of natural cycles in the weather which happen over several years or even decades. So it could be in 10 years' time we get lots of lovely, lovely summers because it's a completely opposite sort of pattern, or it could be part of the long-term trend of climate change, and we're just trying to unpick the different reasons at the moment.
What do we need? What stage? Well, how much information then do we need in order to unpick that? How far back do records have to go before we can confidently say this is a trend?
It's a good question, and you do need a long weather record to try and understand whether something is unusual or if it's just a bit of a coincidence. And unfortunately, weather's very complicated to predict and also to understand. So I think we're really going to have to look at the next few years of weather and see how much, you know, we know that this has been happening since about 2007. We've had a lot of these bad summers, kind of, you know, a lot wetter. So we're going to have to see what the next few years bring and do a lot more research, basically.
Okay, this is the first conversation I've ever had about global climate that hasn't mentioned the words El Nino. That is real. That is a real phenomenon, because this is the kind of tidal movement right across the other side of the planet.
So El Nino is really a global actual change in weather. So it affects lots of different parts of the planet. It does particularly affect the eastern tropical Pacific, but there are actually patterns all over the world that change. And El Nino is a real thing. It's something that happens as part of this, what we call natural variability. So, you know, you get ups and you get downs, you get kind of bumps and wiggles in the weather. So that's what El Nino is. Climate change might affect how often we get an El Nino or how strong those are, but again, it's quite a complicated thing to predict.
You're working at a time, it strikes me as a climate scientist then, you're working at a time, probably for the first time in human history, in which climate has become a political issue.
Yes, it has very much become a political issue.
So separating out the science, I mean, all it takes is for somebody to hack into your email account, find out and think, oh, wait a minute, that's what happened to a leading climate change scientist who appeared to say, no, it's not man-made, although that isn't the whole truth. But it's become much more delicate now. It's much more than just about weather forecasting.
It's very difficult, and there's a lot of pressure on climate scientists to give policy advice, or, you know, it has all become kind of tangled up. If I can perhaps quickly plug my blog, allmodelsarewrong.com, we're trying to unpick really just the science aspects of climate and keep it separate from the politics. And I think, you know, climate scientists are having to make that choice about whether to get involved in policy or whether to sort of steer clear.
Well, I mean, do you make that personal choice then? I mean, is it up to you as an individual climate scientist, say, if you publish a paper that says there is definitely climate change, and it is definitely about the production of carbon dioxide by human beings. That's going to put you into a spotlight, put you into a camp. Do you kind of avoid that, or do you embrace it?
Personally, I try and stick only to the science.
Right.
And I think there's quite a clear distinction between saying, here are the different things that I think might happen in the future, and here's why, versus what we should do about it. So, you know, I don't know enough about economics and politics to give advice on that, for example. Mm-hmm. But I would be happy to say, for example, what the relative merits of, I don't know, using something like a big geoengineering scheme, like giant mirrors in space, versus reducing CO2, and what the effect on climate would be of those two different things, and that the scientific predictions, basically.
So, all right, so yeah, separating science and politics, because not knowing anything about a particular subject doesn't necessarily stop everyone from talking about it. That's a real problem, and I'm not just talking about politicians, although most of them, but it's also in the world of science as well, isn't it? Because sunspots, it's sunspots, that's what it is. It's sun, and there are some people who believe absolutely that it's all down to the transit of Venus, or that it's all about sunspots, and that people who say that it's not are part of some form of global conspiracy of trying to keep things quiet. Science, as we've talked about many times on the programme, seems to have a problem in getting itself, it's better at it now than it was, but in getting itself out, getting itself heard, and saying, these are the scientists you listen to, and these are the people who just sound a bit sciencey.
I think so, and I think there are lots of problems in that. I mean, just in Newsnight the other night, there was a comment on the Arctic sea ice story, and there weren't scientists discussing that topic, and you know, it is hard for climate scientists to put their head above the parapet and get involved in the media, but I think more of us should, and more of us should be out there just representing the science accurately and not getting hysterical in one direction or the other about whether it's catastrophic or whether it's nothing, and just getting out there and getting our research heard.
You're getting the research heard. It's such a difficult field, isn't it? Because I mean, we are in a very, very large part to blame for that. When I say we, I mean the media, because we have this tendency to say, well, we must balance this idea out. You say one thing, we'll find someone who says another thing, so it instantly becomes a fight. And also, it's unbalanced. I mean, look at the whole of the MMR scandal, which basically the media invented. It created the whole thing, although there was no scientific evidence for it at all. And we said, yes, but there is, because this man says there is. And we balanced up this man with the opinion on the other side. The fact we had one individual against every other single doctor in the whole world didn't seem to make any difference. So it's a hard field for you as a scientist to even know where that balance lies.
It is difficult, and science doesn't work like that anyway. It's not black and white, it's not fact and not fact. It's about the balance of evidence, and it's often about probability and risk and uncertainty and quite kind of subtle concepts. So this idea that you can have he said, she said, just doesn't work, and it has obviously really gone wrong in climate science.
Yeah, 95% of scientific research is asking the right question. I think it was Einstein said, wasn't it?
Yeah,
something like that.
Well, we all love asking questions, yeah.
Well, exactly, but you just got to find the right one, and that's the important thing. So we know from the science that the jet stream definitely moved south. Whether it's temporarily moving up and down, whether it's part of the natural variation, or whether that forms some kind of trend, whether we could use that accurately to predict a model for the weather next year, I guess from the title of your blog, you're saying we can't.
Well, there's emerging evidence that climate change, you know, caused by humans but also natural changes, is affecting the jet stream in these ways. So it's partly about the reduction in Arctic sea ice. We've seen a very strong minimum this year and also in 2007 and a long-term trend of a reduction in sea ice. And also an increase in the temperature over the North Atlantic, so warmer oceans. Both of those things we think are changing the jet stream and the weather in the UK, not just wetter summers but also these colder winters that we've been seeing. So there's an emerging kind of feeling that that's what's going on, but it's still quite a new area.
Mm. Well, that is absolutely up to date then with the scientific thinking on what's happening with the climate. Your blog, again, is called allmodelsarewrong.com. That's not a statement about the fashion industry, by the way. Allmodelsarewrong.com. Dr. Tamsin Edwards, climate scientist from Bristol University. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.